In this episode of Geo Talk, we honour a changing of the guard. We give you the second clue in our Geo Stuff competition. And we hear about someone who has been everywhere. All this and more on Geo Talk. Welcome to episode 77 of Geo Talk for September 2011. I'm your host, Darren, also known as Spin Doc Bob from the Spin Doctors. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. If it's your first time, welcome on board. Now, a few bits of news to get through. First of all, there was an interesting interview in South Australia on ABC Riverland just in the last week or two with Margot Krennic. Now, I'm not too sure exactly which geocacher this is. Maybe we can out them. But they have a chat to Jessica Swan and Bruce Mallett about geocaching, and it's quite an interesting interview, and I'll give you a link in the show notes to that one. And talking about interviews, Locus Lingua, or also known as Jeremy Irish, was recently on an episode of GeekWire radio show and talking about how geocaching started and his role in it and where it's heading. It's an interesting interview, and once again, I'll give you a link in the show notes, or you can go to geekwire.com and find that episode. But what's more interesting about that interview is I followed it up with a post on Jeremy's Facebook page asking him when he might be coming down to Australia and New Zealand. And he replied back the next day saying that a few of them are looking at coming down under in 2012. So there you go. If you haven't heard it already, there's a bit of an announcement that the folk from Groundspeak, some of them might be heading down under sometime next year. Now, I mentioned in the intro there's been a changing of the guard, and there's a new leader on the Australian geocaching leaderboard. Now, for many, many years, in fact, as many years as I've known, it's been Macamob, although at one point I think Dax Emu Mob jumped up there into first place. But Macamob had been leading and were the first team to reach 10,000. But in the last month, Liz and Bruce have passed them and are now the most prolific Australian geocachers. Now, both teams were actually in the US recently for the mega event that was occurring over there. I think a few others, Flipper and Co. might have been there as well. But Liz and Bruce have racked up 12,050 caches now. They're about 100 ahead of Macamob, and it looks like they'll probably continue to streak along. So those numbers are just incredible, 12,050 geocache finds. And it's not the only place where there's been a changing of the guard. In South Australia, the leaderboard has sort of been going neck and neck between Team Astro and Freddo. Both of those teams have been going to and fro. And also in New South Wales, we're seeing Marcus Vitruvius rack up some big numbers. I think he's up to about 6,500 now. So to those people with those big numbers, well done. Congratulations to you all. Of course, it's not about the numbers, but it's about finding those geocaches anyway. Now, one thing that's taken off with some geocaches is Munzees, and I decided to have a go, and I hid two recently in slightly different ways just to test out how they work and what it's like hiding them in different environments. One, I have to admit, I just used sticky tape to cover it up and placed it on a fence, and it seems to, after a couple of weeks, been surviving quite well. Another one I laminated as a card, and I've hidden inside a container and placed that. And it'll be interesting to see over the next few weeks and months how they handle. But if you're looking at getting at Munzees and you want to get into a more sort of, you know, sturdy product that lasts a long time, there's a plastic solution that's being offered by a cacher called Thanks for the Cache. Now, if you head to his website, t4th.net, you'll find that he's actually producing these plastic versions. They almost look like a thin metal plate that has four holes, and you can screw it in or you can use a magnet to secure it to an area. That will give you a more longer lasting solution, I think. But anyway, check that out. That's at t4th.net. Last episode, I got on my soapbox and banged on a bit about challenges and my feeling that if you don't like it, don't do it. Well, I might add a second thing to it, and that is, if you don't like it, don't necessarily vote them down. I hid one, or created one, I should say, about a week or two back, called the Sydney Hold Up the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Now, you know, I don't mind if people are voting it down, and I think at the moment it's got more votes going down than voting up. I think it's about 8 to 12 at the moment. But I must admit that I'm a little bit disappointed in if people are going to vote wrote them down that they'd provide no reason. And I'm not alone in this. I was listening to episode 335 of Podcatcher during the week, and I noticed that Sonny was feeling exactly the same way. He created one down near San Diego that was getting voted down and for no apparent reason. He believes that it might have something to do with people who just don't like challenges are going around and voting them all down. If that's the case, I mean, that is a pretty disappointing thing, and I'm hoping that people might, reconsider doing that. I mean, if you do want to vote down a challenge, then by all means put a note on it as to why you don't think it is a good challenge. And to those of you who do like challenges, I encourage you to vote them up, and especially those that you like. So anyway, that's my view on the challenges. They seem to be puttering away. There's some good ones that are coming out there, and some of the worldwide ones are looking like a bit of fun. So keep your eyes open and have fun. And remember, if you don't like them, don't do them. It seems every episode that I record, there's a new online geocaching store around. And I got an email from Alan down at Albury Wodonga the other week to say that he's got a shop called 101geo.com.au. So you can check that out. That's at www.101. So that's the numbers, geo.com.au. Now, 101 Geo is just been announced as a gold sponsor of the Oz Mega 2012 event. So if you want to get behind Alan and his store and help support the mega event at the same time, check out his website. And don't forget the competition that we're running over the next couple of months, thanks to Carl and the crew at geostuff.com.au. And this is a fantastic prize for this competition. First prize is a Magellan Explorist GC. That's a GPS. Now, I've reviewed one of these last year just before I destroyed it, and that's through a bit of my fault. But it's a fantastic unit, and it's usually valued around about $200, $300. So this is a pretty big prize to give away. And second prize is a one-year geocaching. Geocaching.com premium membership. Now, if you want the first clue to work out who the mystery person is that you need to work out, go back to episode 76 of Geo Talk. But your second clue for this particular one is there are no new steps. That's the hint. There are no new steps. So take on board that clue, go back to 76 and grab that clue. Don't send in your answer yet. Wait until next episode. We'll give you a third clue to help you solve who the mystery person is. And once we've given you that clue, you can send your entries in. Given that next episode we'll be heading across to New Zealand to do some geocaching on the North Island, we thought we might give Alan a bit of a rest and we'll hear from him next episode. So we'll jump straight into the GeoTalk trivia question. And for this episode, it's which cache has the most DNFs? So in Australia and New Zealand, which cache has the most did not finds? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Let's look at some of the events that are occurring around the country in the next couple of weeks. Now, on the 24th of September is Splatam's 500 Days and Counting, and that's going to be held in Maldon in central Victoria. On the 1st of October, which is the long weekend for a couple of states, is Lunch in Kuta with Tiger's Den of CVG. Now, that's being held in Cootamundra in southern New South Wales. And also on the 1st of October is the Yarrandere 4x4 event being held by the Rats, and that's over in the Blue Mountains, just out southwest of Sydney. Now, also on the long weekend, there's a bunch of events, two lots of events, one being held by Team Waldron. They'll be held on the 30th, the 1st, the 2nd and the 3rd of October. And that's part of a trek that seems to be heading up from Port Augusta up into the through Oodnadatta and the backcountry there up in North Eastern South Australia. And there's a similar one being held by Adrian Mack on the 30th of September, the 1st of October and the 2nd of October. And that's going to be up in Cameron Corner, which is in the northwest of New South Wales. And also on the 15th of October is up Mambury Creek, being held by Acme Caching, they're there in South Australia, and they've got a CETO that's also occurring on the same day. So those are some events that are occurring around the country. Now, one of the things I noticed with those events is that they all seem to occur one after the other, and obviously you've got to be part of that trip. And I'm not begrudging the fact that, you know, the events are being held in the middle of Whoop Whoop. I mean, I'd love to attend them. If you can't get to them, oh well, that's bad luck. But what strikes me is, when does an event or an event that goes over a couple of days become individual events? And when does a CETO that's being held on the same day as an event at the same location really be a CETO? I just find it a little bit strange and interesting, but, you know, everyone plays the game differently. So what are your views on it? I mean, if you hold an event on a particular day at a particular venue, and then organise a CETO straight afterwards, should it really be a separate event, or should it be all one and the same? If you've got a view on it, send it in to us. Love to hear from you. So let's look into the GeoTalk mailbag, and our first email is from Andrew, and I'm hoping I get this right. It's Juru GC. He says he just found out about the podcast through the GeoStuff competition, and it's the first podcast he subscribed to and is enjoying it. Well, thank you very much, Andrew. He says, being a new geocache for about 3 months, he's having a lot of fun finding hides around the Sydney CBD, especially enjoying the journeys and the views, not to mention how the caching skills have helped him walk a couple of kilometres just by searching for a single cache. It's good exercise. Anyway, he's in the process of converting some more Muggle mates and is hoping that the hobby will catch on amongst his friends, and keep up the splendid work. Thanks very much, Andrew, for your email. Another Andrew, also known as Groovy Doo, has written in, and he says that when he heard a recent podcast about I've Been Everywhere Man, he thought he might send in this email. He says he might be bragging, but back in March, he actually met Peter Harris. Now, Peter Harris is a gentleman who's been trekking around Australia, actually visiting each of those locations in the song I've Been Everywhere. And if you go to his website, it's www.ivebeeneverywhere, or one word, no apostrophe, .com.au, and we'll give you a link in the show notes. He's just recently completed his journey around the country as part of a fundraiser, raising money for the Fred Hollows Foundation. Anyway, Andrew says that he met Peter while he was visiting Dorrigo in New South Wales, and Andrew is actually editor for the Dorrigo Gazette, which is, he claims, one of the last remaining letterpress newspapers, which recently celebrated its 100th year. He's the editor, and his father still is the owner, and they've been printing that there in Dorrigo. Anyway, he said that he's got a cache nearby, GC2DC27, that's placed near the newspaper, and he's met quite a few caches who have been in the process of finding it. And also mentions that Zelgoriath currently has a travel bug, which is dedicated to the newspaper, and that's in the UK at the moment. Anyway, he said, well, if people want to come out to Dorrigo to say hello, and also check out the Dorrigo Steam Railway, and there's a cache out there called Chugalug, GC1Z4F4. Anyway, I want to say that he really enjoys the podcast, and hopes that some people get to come out and visit the town. So thanks very much for that, Andrew. And finally got an email from Gary, Sam, Paul and Bessie the dog, also known as Black and White. Says that I mentioned in an earlier episode that I was enjoying the Android phone and that they'd recently bought one themselves and wondered what apps that I was using. Well, the apps that I'm currently using on it, or I've got loaded on the phone, are CGO, Neon Geo, and CDAK. Now, I did try the Groundspeak geocaching app, and it is actually a very good app, and I quite enjoy it. And I know that Alan Radio Nut 50 enjoys it too. But one of the problems with the phone that I've got is it's got a small internal memory. It only has about 150 meg. And unfortunately, the Groundspeak app is the only one of those ones that I listed that actually saves onto the phone memory. It can't save on the SD card. So for the moment, I've actually taken it off until they change the way they do things. The CGO, it's open. Make sure you get the open source version, because there is another version that's no longer being updated. The open source version, it's free and it works well, but I've actually found that it can be quite slow. And the reason is because I think it's doing a bit of data scraping off Groundspeak. Now, Neon Geo is the first Android app that actually uses Groundspeak's API. Now, it does cost a few dollars. I think it's about $3.50 or $3.99 Australian. It does use, as I said, Groundspeak's API, and it's very fast, and it's probably one of the best ones that I've seen out there so far. It's very slick, works quite well. The Groundspeak app, well, as I said, it is quite pricey. It's nearly $10. And unfortunately, at the moment, it saves on the internal memory. Hopefully, they'll move that. And GDAK, that's quite an interesting one. I've just got it to work this morning. What it does is it actually takes your GSAC database. You actually copy the database onto your SD card. You don't do any exporting, and it will read all the data from your GSAC database. And I'm going to try that one when I'm over in New Zealand, because I need to switch the phone's data connection off so I don't get charged a heap. But anyway, that's the apps that I'm using at the moment. If you're using an app, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us an email at geotalkpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll find out more. And if you've got a comment or a suggestion, or just want to say hello, send it through via the email geotalkpodcast@gmail.com, or phone it in on 02 800 50 436. And talking about phone calls, we've got two that came in this month. The first one is from Neukmeister in the ACT.
G'day, Darren. Just listened to the GeoTalk episode 76. Great stuff. Enjoyed it. And it reminded me that I should ring in for a little geocaching story of something that happened to me on Sunday. I was out walking my two old dogs and my little five-year-old son. Well, he was in a scooter anyway. I wasn't walking him. Down near Lake Burley Griffin there in Canberra, picking up a tank engine case that I hadn't done. And we were just back at the car, putting the old dogs back in the car and having a bit of bite to eat, when I got a few emails of some new caches. And one of them was at the other end of Madura Road. So I bundled the boy into the car and thought, that's not far away. It's only about 12K drive, so I'll jump in the car and go for it. So we've zoomed away, got there, got the first to find. It was just a mint tin in a road barrier, but was just about to put it back when the second finder showed up, and storm catchers, who've been getting quite a few first finds lately, just pipped them at the post. And then I was on my way back down the road heading home, and another couple of emails came in, and two caches. One of them was called Casuarina Knoll, and the other one was called The Labyrinth. And I thought, oh, Casuarina Knoll, it's probably a new tank engine cache out at Casuarina Sands. I'll have a look at this one called The Labyrinth, and noted that it was just off the top of Mount Aisley. And if anyone knows Canberra and where I was driving, I was quite close. So I zoomed up to the top of Mount Aisley, left the old dogs in the car with the windows down at a gate, and wandered down a path towards The Labyrinth, which is quite an interesting location. But I'll let you look up that case to work out what that's all about. Got there, got to The Labyrinth, got first to find, so two in a row. And then I thought to myself, well, there's that Geocaching Australia location list that you can claim if you get three first-to-finds in a row with no other finds in between and no caches with you when you go and find them. So I thought, oh, well, I've got another about an hour of daylight. I might be able to nip out. I'll have a look at that Casuarina Knoll cache. So I bring it up and see, to my surprise, that I'm 300 metres away from it, and that it's not, in fact, out at Casuarina Sands. And that this one and the Labyrinth have been placed at the same time. So we, me and the boy bush-bashed a bit, found the path, got there, spent about 20 minutes searching for this one. It was quite hard to find, even though the coordinates were spot on. And three first-to-finds in a row. So I was pretty happy with that. I've got three first-to-finds in a row twice before, but they were both big bushwalks with other parties, so I couldn't claim that location list. So it's been a long time coming. And it was a great day, a great end to a great day. So keep up the good work on GeoTalk, and looking forward to the next episode. Have fun in New Zealand.
Thanks for that, Jeremy. And our second one comes from Calypso62 at an event recently held in Sydney.
Yeah, g'day, GeoTalk. This is Calypso62. currently out at the All Aboard the Geo Express event out here at Goulston. It's been a fabulous day so far. Lots of people turned up, lots of geocachers, lots of chat about all things geocaching, and of course everybody's enjoyed some train rides around this fabulous little location. So I just wanted to call in and say good day to everybody out there, and let you know that we've all had a fabulous time at the event here. Okay, all the best. Catch up with everybody in due course. This is Cribs 062 signing off. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks, guys, for those calls. And don't forget, if you want to hear your voice on the GeoTalk podcast, give us a call on 02 800 5436. That's 02 800 5436. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. Before we go, we better give you the answer to the GeoTalk trivia quiz, and that is, which cache in Australia and New Zealand has the most DNFs? Well, I'll go state by state first of all. The cache with the most DNFs in the ACT is Can You Hear the Drums, or Bells, Fernando. In Northern Territory, it's Tunnel Number 5. In Queensland, the Mexican with the most DNFs. South Australia is Topsy Turny Train. In Tasmania, Dam Ducks. In Victoria, South Bank. I can understand why on that one. I think I've got a DNF for that one. In WA, it's Hi Ho, Hi Ho, It's Off to Jail I Go. In the North Island of New Zealand is Fountain of Knowledge. And in the South Island of New Zealand is Nano Pow, which means New South Wales has the cache with the most DNFs, and that's Jekyll and... question mark, question mark, with 146 DNFs. Sounds like there obviously might be caches to avoid, or maybe if you're after a challenge, caches to try and find. Well, that's all for this episode. Don't forget, next episode, we're going to be coming to you from New Zealand, from the North Island, and we'll catch up with Alan, Radio Nut 50, and the crew from Hamilton. Until next time, safe geocaching.